Yeah, good evening and greetings in the name of Jesus. So, I'm Kevin Graber, my wife Mariana, and we have four children. I should say this about Morris. Morris and I are cousins, but honestly, the truth is we really don't know each other. I know his dad. I know my uncle. But for most of Morris's life, we have not lived in the same community. And he stops in to visit. He's always in a hurry, and he's gone again. And I never go visit him. Oh yes, I did one time. One time. But yeah, we're strangers, okay? We're cousins, but in a sense, we're strangers. I have four children. And by the way, I do not have electronics here this evening. I will try to show you a picture tomorrow night as well, like Morris did. But we have four children, and they're just like Morris's children, except they're about 8 years younger. So they're just about the same age. Our youngest one is four. Our oldest one is 14. And we have, the oldest one is a girl, and then I have three boys. So I guess that's not quite the same as Morris. I am to talk to you tonight about finances and about money. My favorite thing would be to talk to you about teaching. I'm a teacher, or I have taught. This is the first year in the last 16 years that I haven't been involved with the school. Not all those years was I teaching full-time, but I've been involved with the school. And it's something I love to do. So how many of you are teachers here tonight? I got one there, one back there, a couple here. Okay, I wish I could come to your classroom. Today, we was rushing to get here, and we got the wrong place. And when I come in there, here I was in the classroom. I don't know if it's any of you all or not. I got to the school. I said, oh, you got to go down there to the church at Brownsfield. So, okay, I left the school and went to the church. But I love to have spent more time in the school. I don't do, you know, a perfect job teaching. But, you know, I work with children, and you can make all kinds of mistakes with children, and they'll forgive you. Adults, I hope you forgive me tonight, too. I'll talk about to you about finances, about money. I'm not an expert at this, okay? I think Morse could have done a better job than what I could have. Okay, he probably handles thousands of dollars more than what I do in money. But that's not the point. They asked me to do it, so I will do the best I can. There's a book. Phil, has that book been passed out? Is the book not here?
I'm not even sure.
Managing God's money. Oh, the book's not here. Okay, well, then you're good to go then. I was going to say that I will not follow the outline of the book in any shape or form. It's a good book, and they were going to order it. I thought it was going to be here, but that's fine. You know, in my studies, okay, I have talked very, I've given, yes.
John. The book made it here. We've got it in there if you want.
No, okay, you can pass them out tomorrow night. There's no point. The book, I want you to read the book, though, okay? If you get a book and you don't read it, then you give it to somebody else that will. Books are of no value sitting on the on your desk. I don't know how many I've got sitting there. Well, I've started some of them, okay? I've started some of them. But I've given books away. My son did a count one time in our house, and he wanted to see how many books are in our house. And I forget the number now. 1,200. Is that what he came up with? I forget now the exact number, but he had the exact number of how many books are in our house. That's too many. So at that point in time, I said, it's time to give the books away. So if someone asked me about a book, you asked me about a book, I have it, I will give it to you. It is of no value sitting on my bookshelf. So that's my advice for you about books. Tonight, I am going to talk to you about ownership. And if the Lord tarries and it works out tomorrow night, I will talk to you about stewardship. And Sunday night, I will talk to you about generosity. So I've titled the talks, Spend Wisely Tonight. Tomorrow night will be Save Diligently. And Sunday night will be Give, is to Give Generously. in the book of Matthew, the Lord talks about money. Jesus talked about money 109 times. In the book of Luke, he talked about it 57 times. No, that's in the book of Mark, he talked 57 times. In the book of Luke, he talked 94 times. And in the book of John, he talked 88 times. Have you been calculating? In the four Gospels, he talked 348 times he mentioned money. Jesus talked about money. Over 500 times you can find reference in the Bible about money. Jesus gave a number of parables, about 30-some parables. Of the 30 parables, you know how many of them consisted money, about money? Half of them. Half of the parables he gave talked about money or was a story about money. I don't know if you are like I am, but some reason I think that God is over here and I'm over here and my money has nothing to do with God. Well, yes, I should bring some to church. Has anybody brought money to church to put in the offering tonight? You don't raise offerings evenings. Is that what? Okay, Sunday mornings you do though, right? Yeah. Okay, well, does anybody have any money for me? Just a dollar or something that I can hold up. Somebody got money? You got some? Okay, I need a couple of them. I mean, you guys all got money. Now you guys got money? You young guys all got money. I know these young guys got money. That's older guys. We're broke. I need another one. Yeah, here we go. Okay, thank you. Okay, now this one is Mars. And who got? Oh, and Johnny. Okay. Now, I'll be real careful with this money. I hope not. I'm broke. No, I'm not. Here. Oh, I got some money, too. Huh. Forgot about this. Yeah. Okay. This is my money, and that's those two guys' money. Oh, well, it's just a dollar. I need to buy something. And so, oh, I'll put it down here. I lost one already. And so, you know how it is? You get busy with life and money just slips through your fingers. Maybe it doesn't for you, but it does for me. And it just keeps on going. But you know what? I'm pretty careful with these guys' money. You know why? I'm not the owner. You see? I'm not going to whiz this across the room. One thing, it's a $5 bill, and these are just dollar bills. But I'm going to be pretty careful because I'm only... That mic, I don't like that. Some reason, I'm just a steward. And I am more careful with what I do with this money because I would feel bad tonight if these guys would go home and I still had their money. You know, it's just $5, so, you know, $5 doesn't buy anything today. But it's not mine, is what I'm trying to tell you. You get the point? I am responsible to get that back, and like Phil says, with some interest yet. If you want interest, you wait till Sunday night. Money is immoral. Okay? This money is not good or bad. Now, it can do good and bad things. Okay? The way I spend it, the way I use it, is either for good or for bad. But money itself is not bad. It's not good. It's immoral. That means, now let me tell you one more thing money does. Money is like a mirror. You hold up a mirror. It will reflect what's inside here. If you look, yes, Johnny.
Can you explain what
a moral, okay. Yes, a moral is just, it's just a thing, okay? A moral, it's just like this wood, okay? It's just a thing. It, It can be used for good. It can be like that chair you're sitting on. It's amoral. It's not. M-O-R-A-L. I'm a terrible speller. That's one thing you can teach school and not be a good speller, because all you have to do is give out the words. It's their problem to spell them. Let me see how the computer spelled it. Moral. Money is amoral. Did I spell it right? I got to ask my wife. She knows how to spell. My computer spelled it this way, so that's the way I wrote it in. Amoral. Non-moral would mean it's not good. Amoral means it's neither good or bad. Okay. The first verse that I want you to read, it's the verse I want to tell you about tonight, is in Psalm 24, verse 1. You say, how can you preach a whole evening on one verse? I will talk about a parable as well. In Psalm 24, verse 1, is this familiar verse. And maybe you have another translation to read it in. I will read it in the King James. It says this way: the earth is the Lord's. And we can stop right there. The earth is the Lord's. And you say, oh, that's the world. That's where we walk on. But it doesn't stop there. And the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. The fullness, everything that's here, is God's. They that live there, everything is God's. So, we were going to talk about ownership this evening. And I'm to tell you that I'm not the owner of this dollar any more than what I was from those $5 bills. I don't own this dollar anymore, even though I brought it here. I had it in my pocket. I don't own this dollar any more than what I did those $5 bills. It's not mine. It's the Lord's. Now, I'm a steward. I want to talk to you about a steward. A steward's a word that I don't use. I don't say we got stewards at our house. And so maybe your mind goes to servant. No, that's not good enough. Because a servant serves you. A steward, a better word, is a manager. Okay? I don't know how many of you have businesses, but say, for instance, you're the business owner, and then you put some other people in charge to manage. You don't have time to go out there and do all the work. So you delegate to them as, you don't know, you call them bosses? I don't know what you call them. Workers. They are stewards of your resources. You don't send them out to the job to, let's say, build a house, and you say, well, just whatever you can find, build it with whatever material is there. No. You give them material, or you have the material brought there, and then they are to use your material to build whatever they're supposed to build. That's kind of the way it is with God. He gives us money to use, to build. I'm the steward, I'm the manager. I was trying to think of another example to tell you how this is, and it's like we are staying over here at, I don't know where, it's that direction, and it's in an RV, okay, and it's nice, but you know what, I'm careful, I don't want to break anything, because it's not mine. I don't slam the door, I'm careful, and my wife is afraid that, you know, don't do this and don't do that. It's not mine. I am just a tenant or just someone that's living there just for a little time. It's someone else's the owner. And that's exactly the way I should treat my money. It's not mine. It's not mine. I'm just a tenant. I'm just living there. I don't want to break it. I don't want to do something that I shouldn't with it. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. God made man a steward in Genesis 1, verse 28. In Genesis 1, verse 28, I don't care if you turn to it, I'm going to read it to you. It is the only command that God gave to man. Well, that's not quite true. It's the only one he gave before the fall. Genesis 1, 28, they were just created, he just created man. There was no sin, and he gave him a command. It's called the creation mandate. Some people call it that. I love teaching my students this verse. I tell them, you can do anything you want to in the world as long as you do this verse. This is what the verse says in the King James, Genesis 1, 28. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, and that's man and wife, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. That's your job. You are to subdue the earth. You are to farm the land. You are to tame the animals. You are to use it wisely. You are to multiply. Make more. Not just people, but resources, money. You are to increase. Now, let me get this balance here. Now, you wait till tomorrow night and till Sunday night before you judge too much, but you should be getting more money as you get older. You should be obtaining more dollar bills. You know why God put one tree in the garden that he told man, that's not your tree? Don't touch it. Well, that's what Eve said, don't touch it. God didn't say don't touch it. He just said don't eat from it. You know why? They were to dress and keep the garden. They were to work in the garden. Why did he put this tree there? You're like I am. I don't know why either. I'll give you a suggestion. It may be just one of the reasons he put it there, but it was to remind man who owned the garden. That's not your tree. Just like that's not my camper that I'm staying in. It's not my house. That's not your garden. And every time they would walk through there, he would say, they could look at the tree and say, oh, that's God's tree. Only God can eat from that tree. It was to remind them of who the owner was. And the reason I'm saying this is that Satan come along and he says, wouldn't you like to be the owner? Wouldn't you like to have knowledge? Wouldn't you like to be the owner? If you eat of the tree, you become the owner. I don't know why I want to become the owner. Why do I want to become the owner? I mean, this is just paper. Stop and think with me just a moment. You know, this paper was made from possibly not gold, possibly a tree. Who made the tree? And I have a coat, pants, and some shoes, and everything, this building, everything, that piece of metal that you drove here tonight, old or new, that was God's ore at one point in time. That was the earth. God is the owner of this paper. And when man takes ownership of the things that's God's, it's just trouble, trouble, trouble. Let's look at a story. Jesus said a story about a man that took ownership. You go to, see if I can find it, Luke 12. In Luke 12, he told a parable. So this story probably isn't a real story, okay? It's just to make a point. A parable usually had some connection to real life, but probably never actually happened. Okay? That makes sense? But it proved a point. So Jesus says this story. Remember I told you there was 38, almost 40 parables, half of them, or 16 of them, he talked about money. This is one of them, he talked about money. In verse 16 of Luke 12, it says, "And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentiful." Now, excuse me for stopping all the time, but this rich man's ground had a good crop. I got money laying everywhere up here. That's about the way it is. God blessed that ground that he had brought forth a good crop. Do you agree with me? Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute. Man could have said, "I managed it well." Right? Agree with me there? Absolutely. I mean, the Proverbs even tells you that a sluggard is too lazy to go out and plant. So from God's perspective, if you look at it from God's perspective, he blessed it. And this here was good management. It's all how you look at it. It's all the perspective that you have. You know what the difference is? Here, when you say, "God bless me and I got a good crop," that means you're saying God is the owner. When you say here, "I managed it well, I planted at the right time, I harvested it at the right time, I fertilized it at the right time, I did everything just right, and I got a good crop." Tomorrow night I'll talk about stewards, and we'll talk about that. But looking at it from good management is man is the owner. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Are you ready? 17. "And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits." Okay. Here you see it was abundance. And I don't know how to do this, but there was a problem. With an abundance, there was a problem to know, where shall I put it? And then, I don't know how to say this, but I'm going to put it like this. He took it. Okay? I don't know exactly what to say with the problem. When man was ownership, he consumed it. Did you think about it? If he would have looked at it from God's standpoint, God said you can share when you have more than enough. You see, whenever God was the owner, he was blessed, he had plenty, the next thing to do was to share. If he is the owner, he says, "Oh, I got this big crop and I got a problem, I don't know what to do with it." So he has to think and work and... You know how it goes? I know. Let's go to the next verse. Verse 18. "And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and all my goods." You know what I don't know if Jesus said this purposely or if I don't know. Have you noticed how many times he said, "I will do"? Look, someone count that for me. If you got the King James, how many times did he say I in this verse? Someone know?
Three times.
Plus mine. Okay. So basically four times he referred to himself as the owner. I am the owner. God is ignored. I went and looked to see how to spell it. Now I can't even remember. Ignored. God is ignored. Right there is the first place do you see that it was evident that this parable, the man was the owner. Up until this point, each verse we read, you could assume, well, maybe he was thinking this. Maybe he was partially back and forth between him and God. But at this point, in verse 18, there's no question who's the owner. Man is the owner. Now let's go to verse 19. Verse 19, he says, and I will say to my soul, so thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. There's nothing to put here. But here it's enjoyed. One, two, three. I get it. You know, anything I want. If I have enough money, I can buy it. This man sounds like he built a brand new farm. All new barns. All new bins. Everything. Ready for verse 20? But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? God even said, you, those things you thought they were. Now, divine ownership was again reinstated. And there's nothing over here. Nothing. Man has nothing. I'm going to just stop right here and I'm going to just tell you a little story. There's a story about a man in Indiana. And the story is said that he bought another farm. He's a farmer. And he bought another farm. And I never heard him say it. I just heard other people say it about him. They said, you know, didn't you about have enough? This was an old man. And they said, couldn't you let some of these younger farmers have this ground? And he paid an outrageous price for it, or at least for us it was. And he made this statement. He said, well, yeah, he said, depending on which farm it would have been, I would have let a younger man have it. But he said, we really want to get all the farm that we join. And it joined one of our other farms, so we wanted to add to it to us, to ours. Now, you do a little thinking about that. You don't really want those other farms. You just want the ground that joins yours. Okay. Where are you going to stop? Yeah, you buy this farm, and then it's going to join another farm, and it's going to join another farm, and another farm. Now, I'm not judging the man, okay? I'm not judging the man. I don't know. I didn't hear him say it. I hope he didn't say it, okay? Let's just assume that he didn't say that. That someone just put a bad rumor out about him. You see, the mentality of ownership is sometimes just so evident in the way we live. There's a story about this man that it says he can't be buried in the church cemetery because when he dies, it's going to take a huge place to bury all his things Really? I heard one man say, he was talking about money, and he said he's never seen a hearse pull a U-Haul. It's kind of humorous. I kind of had to smile a little bit. That tells you how much we'll take with us. That tells you how much I own. I need to wrap this up. I need to finish. Let me tell you this. Let's just talk about money. There's a checklist you can do. And this is what you can think about. Whenever you open your billfold or whenever you see someone count out the money, are you thinking about God's watching? Or when you're thinking, tallying up those figures and balancing the checkbook. I'll talk about this tomorrow night. I'm just going to talk practical here. When you're tallying up those figures and you're balancing the checkbook and those numbers are increasing, are you thinking about God's watching? I heard a man say, and I think I'm not as wise as what he was, but I think I could almost do the same. You show me your checkbook, and I'll show you who owns it. And that's about where you write your checks. Now, maybe you have to show me your credit card bill. Or maybe you have to show me something else. Matter of fact is, it can be reversed. If you would see my credit card bill and where all my purchases are, and you could look at my bank account, and you would look at my statement, and you could see where all the money goes. And I'll talk about this tomorrow night a little bit, how you can do that, and more Sunday night. You could soon find out whether I believe like this man or whether I believed like God wants me to believe. It wouldn't take you long. You probably wouldn't have to see more than 2 months' statements. And you would know. Real easy. Should know it in 1 month. Now, maybe you're thinking, money, I'm going to do with this? It's really getting scary. Well, let me read you a verse in Deuteronomy 8, verse 18. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. It's not wrong to be rich. It's not wrong to get more money. It's not wrong. Matter of fact is, some of us can work hard all our lives, and whenever we die, there's just not much in money to show for. And some of you can say, oh, he was just a poor manager. And probably that's what you would say about me. In reality, though, if this verse is true, it's God that gives you wealth. It's God that makes this dollar increase. Not good management on man's part. Now, that's important. I'll talk about that later. Another verse. No, I should say this. I'm going to tell you this. Some of the most profound things about money come from our wives. Okay? Those of you that are not married, you don't understand this yet. But my wife has given me the most profound things that I needed to know sometimes. She said, no, we do not need that. There is a lady in the Bible that said one of the most profound things there is to say about money. She was Hannah. You know the story of Samuel? And she wanted a little boy. Or, I don't know, she just wanted a child. And God gave her a little boy. She went to the temple, took him there. You know the story? And she prayed. Do you know what she said in that prayer? She said a big, long prayer. But she basically summed up all life's problems, all life situations. And she talked about money. This is what she said. The Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. You just thought I was poor because I don't manage well. Well, what do you think about whenever you see that beggar standing out there on the street? Do you have any of them in Texas? They hold this sign. The man would just get a job. I can judge that man right and left. And I'll talk about that tomorrow night again. There is a point that we need to work. But you know what? Sometimes We need to stop and think, God makes the rich, God makes the poor. Just because I'm one of either one of those does not make me better or worse. That man holding the sign has just as much value as what any of you or I do in God's sight. Now, more than likely, I would judge him to this point. He did not have the opportunity that you and I have. You see, when I see him from that standpoint, it makes me more willing to give him a dollar. I'll talk about that later. This is what Isaiah 5, verse 8 says, "Woe to those who join house to house, who add field to field until there is no more room, and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land." That's about that man that I was telling you, he just wanted to join, he just wanted the land that joined his. He says, "Surely many houses shall be desolate, huge and beautiful houses without inhabitant." I will tell you a story. This man in Virginia, and you can check me out, in 1912, he built a house. It took over 10 years to build this house. It was made out of a certain stone from Italy. A stone was shipped here. It was built. In 1912, it had hot water, running hot water. It had electricity. Now, in this part of the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, there was no such thing as power plants. So this, on the 600 acres of piece of property, he put his own power plant to generate electricity for the house. You get it? The biggest window in the house had over 4,000 panes in it. You know, back in 1912, you know, you'd have the little dividers and you'd have the panes, window panes. 4,000 panes. I saw it with my own eyes. 600 acres, this huge mansion, plus all kinds of gardens and whatever went with it. It was only inhabited for 10 years. For 10 years. What do you think happened? He died. His wife died first. And he died. The house has changed owners and changed owners and changed owners. And to my knowledge, no one has lived in the house since. Today, it's shambles. I wouldn't want to live in it today. Now, they have tried to restore it to a certain extent. At one time, cows walked in and out of the house. Animals went in and out. And thankfully, everyone's thankful that this big window, a domed window, those 4,000 panes, didn't get broken. No one understands why. I live in a 1,400 square foot home. It started out as a 14 by 22. It was built in 1901. Now, the owners before I bought, in 1901 it was built. I don't know if it took 10 years to build it or not. I doubt it. But it was added on, and there was this put on it. And somewhere throughout, owners prior to me, they put a bathroom inside. And I've kind of extended a little bit myself. And we added another second bathroom last winter. I shouldn't tell you how long it takes for six people to get through one bathroom to get showered and everything. That's the reason we're late everywhere we go. But now we have two bathrooms. You know what? My house, it's not a perfect house. It's nowhere near the mansion that man, it cost over $1 million in 1912. And I know $1 million is a lot of money today, but it was a lot more back then. It's uninhabited. My house, I still live in it. I hope to live in it the rest of my life. Now, I doubt my children live in it. You know, they say, this old house is falling down. Dad, you know how bad. No, it's good. The roof doesn't leak. It's a good house. We love it there. That proves the truth of what this verse in Isaiah 5, verse 8 says. I will finish to you with a story. Maybe this is going back. No, I should have told you this. In 1 Timothy 6, 8, "And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." I don't know what kind of house you live in. If you live in a multi-million dollar home, that's fine with you, with me. I'll let you live there, enjoy it. That's not the point. I want you to be content in whatever kind of house you live in. However much money you have, food and raiment, therewith be content. There was a story of this man, this farmer. This farmer had one cow. And one morning he came into the house and he was so excited. He told his wife, he said, "Our cow had twin calves, a black one and a white one." And he said, "God blessed us." And he said, "You know, the kind of people we are going to church," he said, she wouldn't have had to have twins. Just one is all she would have needed to have in that to feed our family. But since we have the second one, we're going to give that one to the Lord." "Yeah." He said, "Don't you think so?" "Yeah," she said, I think that would be a good thing to do with the extra." And like all wives do, she asked the question, "Now, the black one or the white one? Which one are you going to give to the Lord?" And he thought a little bit. He said, "Oh," he said, "it doesn't matter." He said, "It doesn't really matter. We'll decide that later." He said, "One of us to feed our family, the other one is to give to the Lord." And time went on, life went on, he went about his business. About a year later, she saw him coming to the house one morning, his head was down a little bit, and he was just walking real slow, and she's like, "Uh-oh, something must have happened." And she's trying to think what could have happened that he come walking in so dejected, so cast, and she said, What went wrong this morning? What happened?" And he thought a little bit, and he said, "Well, last night the Lord's calf died." Was it the black one or was it the white one? That's the way I act. When I come up short in money, it's the Lord's money that gets cut short. And I'll talk about that tomorrow night in stewardship. Thank you for your attention. I'm finished. Turn it back to you.